Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday brings you a new story. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
All right, Sal time. Here I am with my broken everything. The laptop screen is cracked. The headphones are whatever this constitutes. The tape and the tilt and the whole thing. What a time to be alive. Sal Capaccio. I've missed Sal. I miss everybody when I'm gone for 11 days. But sometimes Sal and I will text. Do we do that at all? Do we have any conversations over the break here, Sal, or about anything? I'm not sure.
I don't think we really have, to be honest with you. Sometimes
we talked about Eli Kimball. That's what it was.
You're right. We did. You're right. That's I remember that. It was early on in your break. It was early last week when he announced there. It was right after what, July 3rd was the day that he announced.
Right.
So it was that weekend.
It was that Friday. Elijah Kimball of Canisius High School, where my son attends, one of the top, if not the top, high school football prospects in the state, chose Syracuse, and Sal was all over that. In fact, when I saw, they called it the commitment, and it was like 3 minutes since it had been announced, and Sal was there first. Like, it's Syracuse, you beat me to it. I was going to text you, having watched a lot of his games. Really elite player, so
yeah,
good for Syracuse.
That's awesome to hear that, and I hear he's a really, really good kid, too. You know, we call them kids now. I know they are kids, right? But, I mean, even people, even NFL players I call kids sometimes. But, you know, it's great, and I would say I think he's the highest recruited player out of this area since Gronk, and then Gronk actually left though his senior year, went to Pennsylvania.
Right.
We get some Division I players here and high, you know, level recruits, but generally not as widely highly regarded. I think he has close to 40 offers, including like Ohio State, Oregon, to you know, not go to schools like that and to choose Syracuse. Of course, I'm super happy about it. I think that's awesome. Super happy for him that he's here at Canisius, no doubt about that. I will say, though, in this day and age, this isn't his fault or anybody else's who's committing. Until he's on campus, it just doesn't resonate as much as it used to because of all the ways that people now decommit, they get re-recruited, the NIL money, all the things that happen between the time they verbally commit to the time they actually show up.
He and my son are in the same grade year, and I remember asking my son one day after school, how was school today? He's like, great, Eli dunked on me in gym. So there was that, and also, like, that's right when the world was changing in college sports, and as a freshman, one day, I think I just found out online, like, oh, he's got an invite from Oregon. Like, okay, well, that's how it works now. So as a freshman in high school, he's out at everybody's, you know, certain prospect days, Ohio State, everybody. And so great win for Syracuse if it turns out. I mean, it's a running back tradition at Syracuse. I mean, that's a long time ago now.
We've had really, really good running backs over the years. That's for sure. And honestly, Fran Brown is known to be a really good recruiter. That's why they hired him a couple of years ago. He builds really great relationships. You know, he recruited Deion Dawkins to Temple. He recruited or was on that staff and helped recruit him. Same thing with Terrell Bernard to Baylor and Tyler Medakevich. And I know that because when he got the Syracuse job, I asked all of them about Fran Brown. And they all said the same thing about him in some way, shape, or form, which was, he is just a real straight shooter, honest dude, and that's what you appreciate about him. And I love that, to hear that.
Last year, some of the stories were like, he's maybe a little bit nuts. After losses. I don't have a feeling.
You mean
for him,
making guys run after, even though they won, though? They put him on the line and run. And somebody called it performative, right? I think someone on ESPN. And I would say this, if you know anything about Fran Brown, you might not like that he did it. It's certainly not performative.
Okay. Well, I don't, so I'll stay away from that. okay, well, running backs. I don't need this to be in a fantasy context, although I do think we're getting close to the time of year where I can more easily get away with it. James Cook, Sal, is kind of like, he's in between the running back at the low end, 6, and at the high end, 3. I was in a big one a couple of weeks ago where he went 106, 6th overall. Gibbs and Robinson, Detroit, Atlanta, are the two top picks in almost every draft. And sometimes you'll see James Cook as the third running back after Chase, Nacua, JSN, usually. Sixth is about the peak. What are your expectations for him to basically, in essence, repeat what he's done the last 2 years?
First of all, when it comes to rankings, I think, what kind of comparison do I want to make here? I want to make some sort of analogy. I want to say something like running backs are like chicken wings, right? They're all really good, but depending on what flavor you like, it's going to be different. You know, you may have drums or flats. You may like barbecue or hot or something like that, but they all work in some way, shape, or form, hopefully for you. And I think it depends on what you want in a running back and what James Cook does and what other running backs do. And, you know, obviously he's kind of a little bit of Mr. Everything, but I think to get to your question here, though, the Mr. Everything part hasn't completely shown up in the passing game as much recently.
Right.
And that's what we expected when he was drafted. I just think the volume will be less this year, giving him the ball, handing it to him. But I think that volume can be made up for by throwing. And I think a really big difference here this year is Pete Carmichael Jr. now being the offensive coordinator. Now, granted, he's not calling plays, but he has been with Alvin Kamara. He has been with LaDainian Tomlinson. One of the big traits of his offenses that he's been a part of is throwing the ball to the running back out of the backfield. Now, the Bills do have, obviously, we know, you know, Ty Johnson and even Ray Davis. Now, Ty Johnson, to me, is really the guy they like to throw the ball to on third down. And a big reason people, you know, talk about why isn't James Cook, why is it Ty Johnson? One of the reasons is Ty Johnson is a good pass-blocking back. So if you're in a passing situation, you put him on the field, you have to account for that as a defense. James Cook may have been maybe improved there, but he's not Ty Johnson. So when he's on the field, you kind of know you're not going to get him blocking, and you might take advantage of him if he is blocking, maybe even. You know, he's probably going to go out for a pass. So you'd have to think about things like that when you're an offensive coordinator and when people think about why a guy isn't on the field as much. But last year, James Cook only had 40 targets. And to me, to repeat the year he had rushing is going to be really way too tough. I think it's, 1,600 yards leading the league. Who can expect that? But I do think he can be better than he was in the passing game and have, you know, I don't know, maybe 400 yards as opposed to 291. And I think that can make up for some of that.
I'll just butt in here to say that I never bought Cook as a good receiver. Mm-hmm. Really was. It was sort of a stereotype based on his size, I think. And really in 4 years, he hasn't really shown to be that good at it. I mean, there are some famous drops and the volume isn't there. A few things. Johnson is 20 pounds bigger. We talk a lot this time of year about guys getting, you know, changing their weight. That's on defense right now with a new coordinator, a new scheme. It's always Dalton Kincaid, you know, stronger, bigger. Would you be an advocate or do you expect anything of this sort in terms of Cook? Because he's been so successful, I would think they don't want to mess with his frame.
Yeah, I wouldn't think that either. I don't think they want – he's a smaller guy, but he's better smaller. I think if you put weight on James Cook, you make him bigger. First, I don't know if it's going to work. He just doesn't have that frame, as you point out. Secondly, I think it might take away some of his explosiveness. James Cook is an explosive runner. Now, I mean, if you lined up everybody at the goal line and ran a 40-yard dash, I don't know if he's actually, you know, he's going to be the guy that stands out and go, oh my God, he's this blazing fast guy like you get some receivers. But that man's vision and the way that he can move quickly and change direction and get to a spot where he can just run away from people, that's where his explosiveness is. Look at the run against the Jets. Look at the run against Carolina. Those are the runs I'm talking about last year in New York. I mean, these are times when he gets to the second level and he just makes one cut and he just runs away from people because he understands. James Cook is a really smart football player, by the way. Very smart football player. He understands angles. He sees things really well. He knows how to and when to get down, when to take big hits. And I think they're very comfortable with knowing that they can still give him the ball at his frame, and he understands all that.
I also think that running backs' numbers, like volume when it comes to pass catching, is often a function of who the quarterback is and whether he's any good and what are the other weapons. And the Bills are kind of both, where we're always questioning their pass-receiving weapons, but Allen, so often, what's the play? Third and four, second and six or something? He's going. He's not a quarterback like that is not, unless it's sort of his first read, which why would it often be that, he's not going to the flat for Cook. So would that have to be different for his numbers to spike up? Like Pete Carmichael, fine. Does it really depend on Allen, though, to sort of recalibrate how he sort of goes about his job?
Yes, and I think it's yes is the answer, but in conjunction, it's not just Pete Carmichael. Pete Carmichael, to me, can come up with a scheme to allow that to be there, and then you call some built-in plays. But on a play-to-play basis, when Allen's dropping back and his first read is down the field and his second read is over to the right hash mark and then his third read might be to dump it down, yes, that's where that comes in. But we've talked with Joe Brady about this as well, and you know, Joe will tell you that that's on the play caller and it's on the quarterback. Like, the play caller builds in different reads to know when to get to that, and then the quarterback has to decide, do you want to take that chance or do you want to just dump it down? You know, last year going into the year, I felt, look, and listen, this was, and again, now this is going back a year and a half ago now, we're at the owners meetings, and I remember the conversation with Sean McDermott where he kept talking about a way to get the ball down the field sometimes is simply just to give it to the guy who can run it down the field, even through the air. Like, you don't have to throw it over everybody. Just get it to somebody who's going to rig yards after catch. And I just felt, and it kind of happened when the year started, which was, tell Josh, just take the easy button. Take the easy button. Throw it to James Cook out of the backfield. Throw it to Ty Johnson out of the backfield. No one's really covering them. It's 5-6 yards. Why not do that? I think as the year went on, we saw a little bit less of that. But I do think that's partly Joe Brady, like also his influence or what he wants to do. And I wonder where Joe is on that. I believe that this year, given the fact that the Bills changed out Sean McDermott and therefore the defense, but did not change out the guy who's calling the offense, I think that tells me they want to lean into more of what that guy wants to do. And I think that guy wants to push the ball down the field more.
Here we go. Shotgun. Trips right from the far hash, Cook to Allen's right, Shakir in the slot with Kincaid, and who do you want? Say, well, let's say DJ Moore. On either side, you send Kincaid, Shakir in motion right to left, take the snap, fake the handoff, clear out, Moore runs a intermediate to deep route. Here's Kincaid, you know, something. It's man-to-man look, and then you dump it off to Cook, and there's your big play. How easy is this?
There you go.
How much does it pay to be an offensive coordinator, really, Sal? I mean, just simple game, easy game. There it is.
Yeah, and Mike, let's remember, a lot of teams, now, I think last year the Bills did see more man-to-man than they normally do, but we've talked about this. If you play man-to-man against the Bills, you are at risk of turning your back and Josh Allen running.
Yep.
You're also at risk of this very thing happening, which is him saying, I'm just going to dump it down to a guy because he's coming out of the backfield and you guys aren't going to be able to catch up with him or turn around and tackle him until he gets a few yards down the field. So teams will play zone against the Bills. And I think last year that did change a little bit for whatever reason. But that's part of it, which is when you have a running quarterback, it's harder to do these kinds of things. It's harder for him to dump it down a little bit sometimes because teams are just keeping everything in front of them and there isn't that easy button there normally would be.
Well, Cook did run up, not to make the whole conversation about him, although we've done it before. He did run up 342 touches in the regular season and then another 43 in the playoffs. It was a serious workhorse year for him. And now going into another season, what is it, four behind him at 27? It'll be 27 in September. Maybe it's a year away, maybe it's more. But for his body type, we're getting close to a point. This is what we talked about sometimes when his contract was up, like just sort of how much more mileage do you get? We are at a point where that conversation, I think, Sal, has died down, that sort of fervor about, oh, you can't pay running backs after a certain,
right,
because of McCaffrey and Henry,
yep,
and even guys like Jacobs or Aaron Jones. I mean, you have a number of guys that have held up pretty well, but there was logic behind the thinking that it was a replaceable position and that there's a certain limitation to how much work you can handle. So that'll be interesting this year with Cook too. If he can pass block, he shouldn't come off the field, really. Like, only when he's tired should he come off the field. But is that something, just last thing on him maybe, is that something teachable? It's been 4 years, but the Ty Johnson versus Cook point, is that something where the Bills can get Cook without taking away from what his value has been? To a point where he can, because that's a strategic advantage if he's on the field. It's just one more thing for the defense to not assume.
Teachable, yes. Technique, you can definitely teach those things. But at the end of the day, I mean, at his size and certain guys who are great at, you know, what they do on the other side of the ball, there's only so much he can probably do. But yeah, it's not something he's done his whole life as much. So yeah, he can get better at it. And I do think he was better last year. He actually did, you know, did a little bit more of that last year. We saw it in training camp, and it was, you know, something that showed up a little bit more what he did. And he talked about it when he got the contract, like it was one of his goals. So I don't want to sit here and say like he's terrible at it, but you can get better. But I think there's a ceiling on a guy like that at that size to be able to have that skill set.
Right on. Sal Capaccio with me, Mike Shope, here on the Western Hotline. This is WGR. Bulldog is off this week. Well, Cook in fantasy is somewhere between running back 3 and 5 or 6, usually. It's fun. As a Bills fan, it's fun to decide between James Cook and Christian McCaffrey or Ashton Jeanty. Like, those are the running backs who might come in above him. But when you get past that, you're talking about Achan, and then a nice little run in the second round, Chase Brown, Kenneth Walker, Omarion Hampton, Saquon Barkley in some order. So in fantasy, it comes down to like how you want to build your team. But Cook is getting first-round love in fantasy
McCaffrey's
football.
30 years old now, too. He just turned 30, by the way.
It's Sophia with an F, Franklin with a Y, and if you're looking for some bubblegum dum-dum podcast, then you are in the wrong place, baby. Whether I'm reminiscing on the trials and tribulations of working in the corporate world to recapping today's latest reality TV show, you're going to want to pull up a chair and stick around. It's a good time and always 100% unfiltered. Follow and listen to Sophia with an F wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, he's another one.
Your age point. And he's still, I mean, he had 1,200 yards last year.
Yeah, and he'll catch 80 balls in his sleep, you know, if he's healthy.
Right.
So no signs. His efficiency was a little bit down, but still, like, that's a guy you love. You know what's not really a debate in fantasy, by the way, is Allen is everybody's quarterback one. They're, like, everybody. He goes 2 rounds before anybody else. That could be May. Wow. That could be Daniel. Daniels is later. Like, who even know? Jackson. Like, Allen is on his own tier in fantasy as an asset. Really, he is. Again, he is one where you, like, all right, do I want to pick a quarterback this early? I usually don't. But the challenge is, like, do I get sort of blocked out on Josh Allen by the end of the draft season, right? Like, he is everybody's quarterback one, literally 2 rounds from the 3rd to the 5th in many drafts to the second guy.
I mean, Mike, it's just amazing to me that for several years now, not just 1 or 2 years, right, but I mean, going back 5, 6 years, the talk about his rushing touchdowns and I just can't keep this up. And it just continues to happen every year. It doesn't matter. Just does it. You know, it just has monster numbers in scoring touchdowns. It's incredible. And it's just something that every year we're hearing, oh, that can't keep happening. That can't keep happening. They're going to do something different. He's going to run less. Ah, the tush push, whatever the reason might be. And I get it. I'm not even saying that that's not like warranted to think that way. It just hasn't happened. And last year, 14, year before 12, year before 15, I guess we'll go back, you know, 3 years he's had those numbers. But even then he comes in the league with 8, 9, and 8, right? I mean, come on.
Yeah, and we've talked about this many times, but it might be my single favorite stat to look up on Pro Football Reference is rushing touchdowns career. Because Allen, if he lasts, he is going to be, it's going to be legendary stuff. Like, he's already 23rd all time.
It's amazing.
He's 2 behind Frank Gore. Frank Gore, who was here, Frank Gore Sr., played forever and was always sort of a frustrating Hall of Fame debate. Because, like, he was never really great, I would say, but he compiled and, you know, had this 15-year career. Well, Allen, by week 3, could be past him in career rushing touchdowns with no mention of his, you know, passing, his quarterback play otherwise. And the names just get more impressive. He's one away from Edgerrin James.
Have you looked at this yet? Have you looked at it recently to know where could he fall by the end of this year if he has another typical Josh Allen
year?
Sure.
I mean, if you have 12.
Yep.
He's right behind Barry Sanders. Like, he's 12th all time if he has 12 rushing touchdowns this year.
Right. He probably won't catch Barry because he would need 19 or 20 this year. 20 this year. But he certainly can catch the guys right behind him, Jerome Bettis and Franco Harris. Oh, by the way, Eric Dickerson and Curtis Martin. I mean, pretty unbelievable thing. Marshawn Lynch. He has a legitimate chance to catch Marshawn Lynch halfway through the season.
Before the bye week. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it doesn't slow down, that will happen. I mean, he's going to get to 90 this year unless there's a downturn, which could be you know, one thing Warren Sharp said to us when he was on is he thinks the Bills will be having to chase the game more this year because of who they're playing. Mm. And that could be good for Allen's passing numbers. But, and, you know, if he gets into goal to go from the four, no matter what the score is, he's probably going, if not Cook. But, you know, maybe game scripts are a little bit different for him. Okay, well, one time during the NCAA tournament, which is, I know, a few months ago now, Sal came on and we talked about strategy in a survivor pool. And you were down to like maybe the final eight or four teams and needed to figure out how to navigate. What's the game theory here, right? Am I close on this memory?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It was more about strategy than the actual teams at that point.
Yes. So I've got one for you if you have another minute.
I love it. Yeah.
World Cup. Okay. Same idea. Survivor. And I've got France and England. And you can't use a team more than once. So out of almost 4,500 teams, we're down under 100 that are alive. And I have two options here, Sal, and only two. Argentina and Spain are not in the equation. I've used them both.
Okay.
I can either go, and I don't even know if you're really keen to the World Cup. I hope so, since I'm wasting your time with this. But
I have loved watching the World Cup.
Good.
Yes. And I'm not normally a big soccer fan, but I definitely like this stuff and I've loved this one. I am not, I know about these teams, but not in depth. Yes.
It's been so great. And I can't wait to rail against it as soon as we're done talking, but it's been so great. I have two choices, France against Spain and then England in the final to win over France, or England over Argentina and then France over England in the final. The betting slant would easily be the latter. England is favored against Argentina, not by a lot. France is not even like a massive favorite either. Spain is great. So the chalkier choice is to go England and then France. But it would pay better, if I'm right, I have to be right, to go France and then England. Any thoughts?
Why would it pay better?
Because fewer people will do it. France is such a favorite that more people in my position would put England first and then save France for the finals.
I think my thought is you're trying to win at this point and you're not trying to necessarily win the most money. You're trying to win, right? But if you win, you still win and you're going to get money.
Yes. If I play the chalkier, that's right. You're exactly right. If I play the chalkier option, as long as I'm right, I'll win something. England winning the World Cup would be easier to hedge. Like if I got through France and then I have England left and they're an underdog against France, which they almost definitely would be, then I can bet England with money I don't have.
Yep.
And win either way. But it's 100 grand up top, so I want to get it right.
Do you have a thought specifically on each game and think, do you think that betting England against Argentina is smart or not?
Yes. In fact, I planned for it.
Okay.
I had the option on Saturday to pick England or Argentina and have the same situation in reverse. If I'd picked England on Saturday, I took Argentina instead because I think England is better.
Okay.
They're tough, Sal. England is finally tough. England got tough.
They did.
That heat in Miami, the comebacks, winning in Mexico City, nobody does that. I'm definitely vibing with England.
That was an amazing, amazing match, by the way.
It was. Can you take a trombone into a Bills game, speaking of World Cup? Do you happen to know? Is that on the list of things you can't take
into? If you're part of the band that's performing at halftime, you can.
If you're not, forget it.
I think forget it.
Any instrument other than that one guy with the guitar? All other instruments, a kazoo? Band? What is it? What are the rules on this?
It is pretty funny. The one guy, by the way, that's John. He's a friend of mine, and you're right. I mean, they allow him with the guitar. I don't even know. Maybe other people can bring guitars, too.
Grandfather. You know what? That's a thing you should test. Why don't I get to take a guitar?
Well, wait a minute. Now, can I bring drumsticks in? Because it's like a stick, right? I mean, like,
I don't even know.
I don't know.
You can't take an umbrella in, right?
No, you're not allowed to do that.
What about a tomato? It's food. I'm supposed to buy food.
I don't think you're allowed to bring your own food in. It's like the
peanut butter.
There's a Stephen Wright joke about that, by the way, about bringing food into a movie theater as well.
Is that right? I want to look that up. All right. I've taken you for a ride here. Thanks for your time, Sal.
You got it, man.
Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. His appearances on WGR brought to you by Outlet Liquor. What's your outlet? We can love the World Cup all we want. The replay stuff continues to be a nightmare. I mean, if this is your hill to die on, it's kind of mine. It's never going to get better. It just keeps getting worse. And both games on Saturday raised questions about why are we bothering? What is actually happening with this? We've got a ball off a cable, but we can't review that, or we just don't notice it. We've got the dive on the Swiss guy, and he's thrown out. I mean, he had a yellow card already, but both. It's just always more of the same. Let me get my breath, and then we'll talk about this like adults. 803-0550 is the number. I'm Mike Shope. This is WGR.
Hey, gang, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and we are going to move. We are going to answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is huge. This is absolutely huge. You could see Mbolo there. He did move his leg to make sure it hit Paredes.
After review, there is no foul for number 5. And number 7, there is a clear simulation. Final decision, yellow card for number 7.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. And in that instance, all hell is going to break loose here. Switzerland are absolutely furious.
Ian Dark, man, if you're somebody that is annoyed with announcers constantly and have loved almost every moment of the broadcast in the World Cup, then we are best friends. Just the way some of these, Ian Dark especially, John Strong, who's the top guy for Fox, Derek Ray, Hargraves, and Fletcher, all of them are so keen. What's Jackie's last name? She's great too with Warren Barton. I've done this before and I was embarrassed. They're all so good. In fact, real quick, I want to get a call in on the Sabres. And by the way, according to Chad DeDominicis, they're hiring John Davidson as an executive. That John Davidson, who's been Columbus, MSG, Rangers goalie, been around for decades. We'll have to look into that. World Cup announcers. What? Where was I? Maybe it can wait. I want to talk about the replay and everything like that. It can wait. I lost my train of thought on this other Sabres news, but they're all so good. So many football announcers and hockey announcers just really don't, by their words, care about either the words or the truth. And when I'm listening to Landon Donovan, oh yeah, John Strong. So many of these soccer guys, they definitely care about both things. There's just no wasted words. This is really where I'm at. It's clever. It's insightful. It's just so good. John Strong has a particular trait that I really admire. This is what I dislike strenuously about Chris Fowler and several other like top play-by-play guys. Listen to a promo of a baseball broadcast and the play-by-play announcer sounds like he's literally screaming and it's game 52 of the season. There's no context, and like Fowler gets the national championship game, he gets Wimbledon, or maybe he doesn't anymore, he gets top events, but when he raises his voice, you can feel his spit on your face. It's just gross. It's so loud and like in the red that the greats never, ever sound like that. They know how to raise their voice and their level without shouting at you. And Fowler is the type where he is just like spitting at you. He's so, so loud. John Strong, listen to a highlight of his goals. They're all perfect. And it's not even like that word. He's not Ian Dark. He's not somebody who's using his lexicon to great lengths, but it sounds just right because he's able to raise his voice but not be shouting. And that is a great trait. And he is the absolute deserved number one guy for Fox. And every time I turn on a World Cup game, which I've almost watched them all in segments, I get Strong and Holden, I'm like, I'm just delighted immediately. Like, this is perfect. And they're flying all over the map. He'll have one of these games probably tomorrow, I would guess. He'll have one of these games in the semis and then the finals on Sunday, and I can't wait. All right, we'll get to soccer again later. Here's Greg next. Hi, Greg.
Hey, Mike. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Fine. You're welcome.
Yeah. So I think where I'm at with Hellebuck trade rumors, it's kind of revolving around team confidence, like front office Sabres confidence versus like fan confidence. I feel like 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10 Sabres fans would probably tell you like, yeah, we're making the playoffs next year. I'm pretty confident. But then is the team confidence the same way? Like if they feel totally confident that they're making the second round or even maybe even the third round, if they get lucky, why, I guess the Hellebuck move would have to be behind that. I feel if they're not fully confident in next year and they're saying, oh, it may just be a fluke or this season was a fluke, next season I don't know if we're going to be getting to that level again, then maybe they do roll out the same three goaltenders. I don't know. But we're getting into weird kind of Brandon Bean territory where it's kind of like, oh, we're going to test the waters and we're going to reach out to other GMs and we may be in on Miles Garrett or we may be in on, you know, at one time it was Justin Jefferson. I don't know. But it's like, is that Yarmo's strategy? I don't know. But that's what I'm thinking.
Can you stay with me for a minute here? Because
sure.
I think the logic works the other way. If not also, I think the logic works the other way. I think if the Sabres are in on Hellebuck, which I think they are, the logic is instead to take it up a level, to take a second round team that did not get great goaltending when it mattered the most, maybe it wasn't terrible, to the cup. And if they like who they have, then they might think they don't need to bother. You think it's the other way around?
I think it's the other way around because it's kind of like, okay, the playoffs start today. For the next season, I'm just like playing a game, I guess, where the playoffs start today and you look at your lineup, same as what you and Bulldog like to do, where you have a lineup today and you're basically like saying, I want to have a goaltender that I'm confident in. Wouldn't I want Hellebuck there to say that, okay, I can go up against Tampa, Florida, Montreal, whoever I'm facing and say, yes, I'm fully confident that he gives us the best chance? Or sure. Do you want to roll out UPL and Lyon again and just like cross your fingers and hope?
No, I mean, yeah, that's the point. Thanks, Greg. I think why you trade for Hellebuck is a bet on, I've got a great roster and now I need a great goalie and come at me. And I don't hate that. I mean, I've never been invest in goalie guy, but like, I get it. Not to mention how exciting it would be. And I loved a point from today's morning show where it was said, imagine this is being reported as true. Like, imagine you have a superstar in the league and he wants to play for you and you're Buffalo. I mean, when has it ever happened that like we're turning that down? You don't need to be a slave to that. Now, I don't know. I think the reason you get him is if your bet is, I love my team, but my goaltending wasn't good enough and now it will be. And I'm somebody, I know how Paul has talked many times, and I think it's fair. The history with Hellebuck in the playoffs, I just don't care. I never stray from this. Hockey, football, baseball, whatever. I think games are games. I think, you know, even players talk differently and we all attach a much greater significance to it. I don't think the Sabres lost because they were scared. I don't think that was going to be a problem in the first place. And they went and beat Boston. And I think probably you still had people writing the epitaph as if they were just like not experienced enough or something like that. Why? Because that goal went in. I'm never changing on this. There's no reason for me to change on this. I know how we write stories with sports. Otherwise, maybe we wouldn't care. We need for there to be stories, but I think games are games. I think at the professional level, when you get that far in life, in a sport, and you have only made it that far, unless you're a prodigy, even then, you've only made it that far by learning how, as a child, and then a teenager, and then a young adult, how to be able to compartmentalize your emotions and focus and go shift to shift. That's why I think momentum is garbage. I think, oh, well, soccer's obsessed with momentum, by the way. I mean, even at the intermissions, they're asking, who has the momentum? Will somebody ever say, who cares? Who has the ball at this point? Like, it's just why I think so much of it all is garbage. It doesn't all have to be completely meaningless, but a lot of it comes close. Really, I've got, you know, a team of professionals that know how to get ready to go to work, and you skate your shift and you sit down and you're thinking about the next one. And I think those guys are so trained to be able to do that. This point is only, I mean, I could go on forever and I'm sure it's annoying, but it's really just to say that I don't care about somebody's playoff past. It's all well and good to point out that Sergei Bobrovsky was a lousy playoff goalie until he wasn't. Well, let's try to learn something from that. What happened? Nothing happened. He just did better the next time. Like, it's all kind of how sports is. But, you know, if you want to write a story that he learned something, and he'll probably take your question and say that he did, because that works for everybody, okay. I don't care about Hellebuck's playoff history. I just watched him win gold for Team USA. Was that not high pressure enough? Is playing for Winnipeg in a playoff series against Minnesota higher stakes than playing for the gold medal? I'll hang up and listen. So that part of it, and that's not really where the caller Greg was coming from, really, like his playoff pass. I just know that I don't care at all. And I'm ready for him to prove that different the next time, because guys always do. And like, then we'll go to someone else and pick on them for their playoff past. I don't even think Luukkonen or even Lyon. Lyon was good. Luukkonen was fine. Lyon was good until game six in Montreal. And then we got to pull him. I mean, really, it's just so random. Don't care about Hellebuck's playoff past. I'm not building any argument on Luukkonen based on the game seven goal or any of his playoff performances. I don't care. I think, you know, those guys are both, to varying degrees, proven good to great players. But if I'm the Sabres, like I was saying to the caller, if I'm the Sabres and I'm, you know, in a meeting, which now perhaps would include John Davidson, who was a goalie and has been an executive with Yarmo for many years in Columbus, like they must see him as an important voice. And I'm going to stereotype myself right now by saying, which side do you think he'd be on? Go get your star, go get your goaltender, and go from there. And the Sabres can afford it. They can afford it financially. They can afford it by their roster. It's just a matter of coming to terms if Winnipeg is ready to move him, which I think it is. I think it sounds like every time you look up, there's another Connor Hellebuck trade rumor. And if Winnipeg is ever ready to shoot that down, feel free. They don't. So if you're ready to go win and you think you've got the team to do it, which I think the Sabres are entitled to think, then it's Connor Hellebuck time. And what a rise that would get out of the fans. And maybe the locker room, and maybe the entire hockey world, the NHL world. It's like, okay, Buffalo, I guess you meant it. And we have just almost never been able to feel that. If you think you're going to struggle to make the playoffs, then that's another question, but I don't think really that has to hinge on who your goaltender is. I mean, it was really close. The Sabres ended up in first place, but, I mean, what were they ahead of fifth place? 10 points? Wasn't it like 109, 106, 106, 199? Maybe the top five in that division? I mean, that's a couple of games, head-to-head losses to the team that finished fourth or fifth, then you flip it. Whether it's anything about the regular season or not, I mean, the Sabres are not going to be considered less of a favorite if they trade Jack Quinn and a first and who? Mertka for Connor Hellebuck. Nobody's dinging them in the odds. Instead, they raise, it's eyeball emojis all over hockey. And you know what? I think it could make sense. I think they're in a spot, in a vacuum, they're in a spot where this is defensible. And they don't live in a vacuum. They live in Buffalo, which never does that, which makes it even more exciting. They're more of a Stanley Cup favorite with him on the team, no matter what they give up. With all the love we want to, and you know, time spent fawning over, I couldn't think of the word, time spent fawning over Hellenius and Östlund and Kulik, they're more of a favorite with Hellebuck. Well, Lukanen's in that trade too, right? I like the three-team trade idea, but it's harder to pull off. You don't really ever see it unless you're in the NBA and they make 16 trades, which to me is insane. I can't even imagine a 16 trade in fantasy. I've done three-teamers before, and then you get napkins out and try to figure out different ideas. Six teams seems like a dare. Mike Schoep here, Bulldog is off, 803-0550. Thank you, Greg. This is WGR.
Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast with Dan Hanzus and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.